Welcome back to Your Health, live on the Essential Talk Network. I'm Pamela Clark, and today we're talking with Duncan McKinley, a director of the Tourette Syndrome Foundation of Canada and a PhD candidate at the University of Waterloo. Duncan, you have Tourette's, and we discussed that earlier, but today so far we've been discussing the symptoms, the genetic links to it or origins of it. How does Tourette manifest itself in you? What symptoms do you have?
Sure. I have a whole number of phonic tics, the tics that make a noise. I've got one that's sort of an outward explosion of air. I call it a bark. It gets bored every once in a while. Right now I have an outie where it's an outward expulsion of bark, but every once in a while it swings around and becomes an innie where I pull air in just to keep things interesting and a little spice in my life. I've got a whistle tic that I do. Which is quite funny, because for years and years growing up, I was wanting to be able to whistle like that, and just suddenly one day my neurology figured it out for me. I have a snorting tic. I have a lot of nasal tics where I'm, again, both innies and outies, where I do a lot of sniffing and can make my nose quite sore. I also have a number of different motor tics where they tend, mind, as most people's tend to be, are more upper body. In fact, that's fairly diagnostic of the disorder, and there's some neurological reasons for that as well, why you tend to see them more upper body, but tics tend to start in the facial region, and I know my earliest tics were a lot of excess blinking and winking, and very quickly turned into a sort of a mouth extending, where as if you were yawning, except very, very wide, to the point where in the winter, if your skin's quite dry, you can develop a lot of cold sores and rips and tears along the sides of the mouth, because you're opening your mouth and extending it so widely, so frequently. I have a number of head shaking tics, to the point where I go to a chiropractor fairly regularly, because I was doing a lot of damage to my upper vertebrae and really need to be maintained so that I don't develop arthritis prematurely or anything like that. Other tics I have, I have some arm extending tics. I've got sort of, you know, I've got one lower tic. I've got sort of a butt wiggle that everyone seems to like but me, but kind of glad that's my only lower body tic, since, you know, I haven't enjoyed that one too much.
Well, if you do the butt wiggling one in conjunction with a whistle, I'm sure people would be wondering.
and you throw the wink in too, and you really better make sure that there's not a guy looking at you, because
you're going to get your face slapped.
One thing that's very interesting about tics is that they tend to, they aren't completely random. It's not that I just woke up one day and my head was shaking. Tourette syndrome seems to be an expression of extra neurological energy. And if you think of Tourette syndrome as more or less a bored little kid running around in your head without enough to do, but lots of energy and looking for something to do, kind of looking over your shoulder, seeing what you're up to, Tourette syndrome seems to attach itself to certain movements that were at one point in context that you were doing purposefully and had a reason, and they almost get enshrined in a tic movement. So, for example, my head-shaking tic started out because I had long bangs, and so I was always shaking my bangs out of my face. And now, that was a very frequent movement. My bangs got in my face a lot. It was also a very stereotype movement. I tend to shake my head the same way each time to get the bangs out of my face. And those seem to be the two rules that tics follow, frequent movements and stereotype movements. They tend to prey on those. And so before I knew it, I was moving my head whether my bangs were my face or not. And now I have very short hair, but it doesn't matter. I'll be forever shaking the imaginary bangs out of my face. There's other examples. The snort that I have actually did start out as a laugh. And I can remember to the evening that we were laughing very, very hard in residence one night, and I started snorting, and that made everyone laugh even harder, and so I was snorting, laughing even more, and the next day it was a tic.
So it just became imprinted?
That's a good word for it. My research that I'm doing at Waterloo basically explains it by saying that a movement such as eye blinking, which I said is a very common tic, the most common tic actually, is something that's done all the time. So that whether I'm walking through a doorway, whether I'm sitting at my desk, whether I'm picking up the phone, whether I'm typing, I'm always blinking. And so I mentioned that one of the areas of the brain that's implicated in Tourette's syndrome is one of the areas that is memorizes motor movements. And so if this area isn't working quite right, it's memorizing, when it shouldn't be, all of these incidental movements, these silly movements that aren't important to remember, such as me sitting down in my desk and blinking at the same time. There's no meaningful logical correlation between the two. It just happened. But if this area of the brain is a little bit what they call disinhibited, if it's not very well controlled, then it may memorize too much, and it may let some of these extra movements come out when it shouldn't, so that if I've sat at my desk one day and blinked at the same time, that area of the brain, the basal ganglia, remembers that, and the next day I sit at my desk, basal ganglia goes, oh, when you sit at your desk, you're supposed to blink. And if given enough of those silly little pairings, when I stand up, I'm supposed to blink. When I pick up the phone, I'm supposed to blink. When I sit at my computer, I'm supposed to blink. Eventually, you're going to see me blinking all the time. And it's going to be what we call then a tick. So if my model's true, so far the preliminary research has supported it, but that doesn't mean it's definitely true. If it is true, though, basically what tics are the product of millions of silly little learning episodes that we've had that should be inhibited, but aren't.
This leads into one of the postings that we've got, and I'm sorry, I've been fascinated by our conversation that I've been neglecting the postings, so I think we should start addressing some of them right away.
Yeah, sure.
There's one from Nick, and he says, when someone has a vocal tic, why are they saying swear words? Why do some people say particular words and others say others? And are the words they use learned somehow?
Okay. Well, I think we've certainly talked about the learning aspect of Tourette's syndrome a little bit, but he's right by mentioning that Tourette's is sort of a unique interplay between the neurology, the hardware, and the learning environment, the software, so that, well, I'm born and my brain is predisposed to get stuck on something. What those somethings are going to be very dependent on what environment I'm in. And so, to be very facetious for a moment, if I grew up in a monastery and didn't have cable television and had never heard a swear word in my life, I couldn't possibly have coprolalia simply because I'd never been exposed to those particular words to get stuck on. Now, the other part of the next question was why swear words? Why these awful words? Well, it's sort of like... I remember one time hearing a stand-up comedian talk about the weird little impulses we get, and it made me realize that it wasn't just people with Tourette's, it's just that we acted on them, where other people maybe didn't. You'll go into a situation, and the worst possible thing that could happen, the worst possible thing you could do or say will pop into your mind, and it seems to be human nature where you think, oh, can you imagine if I did this? And you quickly think, oh, that'd be awful. One example might be you walk into a room where a fan's going, and you kind of think in the back of your head, gee, what would happen if I stuck my finger in the fan? And if you're properly inhibited, if your brakes work well, you're not actually going to do it. But these awful things that cause all sorts of embarrassment or are scary or a lot of emotion. They're very arousing in that sense that you think, oh, geez, wouldn't that be awful? Those are the exact things that the Tourette's is going to prey on, because stress makes Tourette's symptoms worse. And so, in a sense, if you're at grandma's house and, you know, it pops into your head just like it would pop in anyone else's head, oh, be careful not to swear here because I'll get in a lot of trouble. Grandma will faint and my parents won't take me to Disney World next week like we're supposed to, and on. There's a lot of stress, there's a lot of emotion, there's a lot of stimulation around that thought. And simply because of that, that's going to fuel the Tourette's in them. So as soon as you've thought it, all of a sudden that itch is going to start to build. Oh yeah, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. The itch is getting worse and worse and worse, and before you know it, you're doing the exact thing that you knew you weren't supposed to do and would be the worst possible thing to do in that situation. I know different times I've done presentations, I've had people come up to me, they're just mortified that their child has the swearing tic because the good Christians, they go to church every week. I mean, it seems very ironic that people that have such an emphasis on not swearing and being polite and such have a child with a swearing tic. And in fact, that's exactly probably why they're seeing the swearing tick, because there's such an emphasis on not doing it, there's a lot of stress around it, and that elicits it.
So it's almost like a truth serum, it seems.
I often call that, very, very perceptive, I often call Tourette's syndrome and these other disorders that go along with it sort of disorders of honesty. That really, I don't feel different things from other people, I don't think different things, I don't process things in different ways. I simply have less breaks over what I do. And so my movements, my thoughts, my impulses, my emotions, they're a little bit closer to the surface. It's like there's a neurological microphone being held up to them. And so you've probably heard the saying before that you wear your emotions on your sleeve. In a very real sense, people with Tourette syndrome wear their movements on their sleeve. And there's sort of impulses, the thoughts about movements. Like you might be really thirsty and be walking by someone who's got a big cold glass of whatever it is you want to drink. And somewhere in your mind, whether it's conscious or not, you're going to think, oh, geez, I should just grab that and drink it. And of course, when your supervisor is working well and you're well inhibited, your brakes are working, that area of your brain, the frontal lobe, can go, no, don't grab that person's drink, you'll get arrested. And you just move on, often without even being aware that you consider the option. But when you've got Tourette syndrome, your arm may reach out, you may touch the drink or lunge for it. So in a sense, yeah, I was thinking the same thing as everyone else, it's just that I acted on it. And if you add in the other disorders, like attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and obsessive compulsive disorder, and these various learning disabilities and different conditions that go along with Tourette syndrome, basically what you've got are brakes not working in other directions. So that just like I don't have very good breaks on my movements, I don't have very good breaks on my thoughts, that I'll get stuck on thoughts that will reverberate over and over and over my head because I can't turn them off, just like I can't turn off my movements. And when you can't turn your thoughts off, that's what they call the obsessive compulsive disorder. And so it's not that I'm thinking anything different from anyone else, it's just that I have less control over when I think about what and for how long. The same can be said for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, where now what I don't have very good control over is what I pay attention to, and for how long.
Duncan, we need to take another short commercial break here, but we'll be right back with more on Tourette syndrome. Please, everyone, stay tuned. Call us toll-free, 1-866-377-8255, or go to the Daily Debate site and post your comments live. We've got some more that we'll address right after the break.